Добрый день, коллеги.
Good afternoon, colleagues. On behalf of Desk Email, we are happy to welcome you at this radio conference to discuss Q2 and second half of 2020 results, as well as a strategy update for the company. Representing DSK, we have the CEO, Maria Davidova, the CFO, Ms. Anna Garmanova, the COO, Mr. Fred Kermanov, the Head of E-commerce, Mr. Pavel Peshenko, Head of Logistics, Mr. Denis Gurov, as well as myself, Head of Director for IR and Investor Relations and Strategy, Sergei Levitsky. We have 2 hours for this workshop. We have this webinar webcast in 2 languages, Russian and English. It's going to be comprised of 2 parts. We have prepared a 30-minute presentation for you with a strategy update for the upcoming 30 minutes, and then we'll disclose the second half results and proceed with the Q&A sessions. In the second part, my colleagues are going to dwell upon in more detail on key strategic initiatives, at which point in time we'll have a second Q&A session as well. Esteemed participants, we're very happy to receive feedback from you. On the last page of the presentation, you're going to have a link taking you to an anonymous survey based on the results of this conference today. We'll appreciate your feedback. And then a few points on the Q&A. During the Q&A session, you'll have the opportunity to ask your question orally if you click hold hand or raise hand at the bottom of your screen, or you can click Q&A at the bottom of your screen and ask your question in writing throughout the session. Please note that in the first part of our session today, we'd appreciate questions on the financial performance and the financial results of the company. In the second part, we're going to deliver upon the strategy, and you'll be able to ask questions on the strategy as well. Over to the CEO of the company, Ms. Maria Davidova. Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. Before we proceed with the strategy, let me say just a few words about the results that the company has achieved so far as a public company in the past 3.5 years since we embarked on the road of an IPO. Let's proceed to page 3 of the presentation. On numerous occasions, DSK has confirmed the strategy choices and the fact they were correct thanks to strong and resilient financial performance, which is going to take us to even more interest that investors are going to take in this asset. First and foremost, DSK is a very strong team of high-class professionals, and we have a very efficient business model on top. Thanks to these 2 highlights, our recent years of operations have proved the point. The company is capable of tackling any hurdle or challenge and has a huge upside potential looking forward. Even in the challenging and turbulent crisis of the COVID-19 pandemic, DSK still managed to ramp up its revenue as well as the market share and also EBITDA. Now, let's take a look at our financial performance. In the last 3.5 years, DSK has demonstrated 1.5 to 2 times growth across all the key metrics. If you take EBITDA, we have nearly doubled the number. Now, considering online sales, it's up by 8.5 times, growing from an insignificant portion of the business, just 3.5% of its size, to 1/4 of the business based on the first 6 months of 2020. Please note the company has been growing sustainably, and we have overperformed our promises, guidance to the market from several years running when it comes to financial results or dividend as well, that has been at 100% of net income. We have been growing and continue to grow above the market, thus taking us to the strategic goal of DSK, which is consolidating the market. And all of that is happening despite the, well, not so pleasant and negative economic backdrop and a rather low growth rate of the economy at large and the market where we operate. So, over 3.5 years, since the time of the IPO, we have brought TSR of about 75%. That's the total shareholder return standing more than 27 rubles the share of cumulative dividends since IPO. We are proud of our achievements of the past. In the future, we intend to carry on with our growth story looking forward. Now let's continue to page 4 with a quick strategy update as well. Considering the key objectives of Dietsky's updated strategy, within 3 years to come, there are 2 major goals, which is about maintaining strong and confident leadership in the kids for children and then new opportunities, new markets that we intend to develop and grow as part of our main business. Now let us discuss these 2 objectives in greater detail. Considering solidifying leadership in children's goods retail, we intend to focus on a number of initiatives, starting with, developing in our omni-channel model as we grow organically with our chain, with new stores to be opened and also new format stores, which our colleagues and myself are going to explain in a short while today. Then come online sales too. We would like to grow the market share of online sales, and we see an opportunity to ramp up from the current 25% to 45% in the midterm. Secondly, we intend to embark on a rather aggressive objective of developing the omni-channel logistics and the growing our IT to support the developments of the company. Yet another initiative is implementing best-in-class UX and CX across the channels. And finally, our most recent project is about developing family marketplace. We launched that at the end of 2019. Here we intend to grow a family marketplace into the leading marketplace in the market for the family with the best proposition in terms of the assortment proposition and also pricing proposition for our customers. Considering our other strategic objective, please be reminded that's new verticals or new markets which we'd like to pursue as part of our general business model. Main business model, we have the following 2 objectives, which is launching a Zozavr store network and online platform with aggressive rollout thereof. And it's going to be omni-channel like we do with Dietsky and use the online platform of Dietsky. As you may be aware, the project was launched back at the end of 2018. And by now we have gained enough knowledge and experience of how to develop this project onwards. We are going to explain the Zozavr story later on in this presentation. One other thing is about launching new digital services as part of a uniform ecosystem, a single platform for shoppers as well as vendors and suppliers. Over to page 5. Let's consider how we intend to cement and build on the omnichannel leadership, starting with expanding the omnichannel retail platform as we grow the retail platform we already have. In the midterm, we have the possibility to open 300 Dietsky Mir stores, the standard large size, and up to 800 Dietmir pickup points. This format would enable the company to penetrate smaller cities and towns with less than 40,000 of population, where the standard Dietsky formats would not be as efficient given the relatively small size of the local population. That translates into a new market with a potential of 25% of all goods on top of what we sell already, and that format, Dietmir, is effectively a hybrid of a standard store with about 200 square meters of floor space and a pickup point. Thanks to our expansion opportunities, we intend to increase by 2.4 times to from 847 to 1,900 by the end of the midterm, and that's definitely going to drive our midterm sales. Please be reminded, we are now targeting 45% share of online sales vis-a-vis the current number of 25%. Our logistics target is as follows: 80% of online orders must be delivered next day. Currently, that's 30% of next day deliveries, so that means we intend to grow this number rather significantly by 2.7 times. On top of growing organically, we also intend to open DCs and regional DCs. We're talking about two federal DCs with a capex of 2.5 billion rubles. They are going to support our growth offline, among other things. And then on top come three regional DCs, which are smaller in size, and the capex target here is about 100 million rubles for each DC. Now let's consider the third silo here, enhancing the UX and CX. NPS is the key metric as we see it, and we intend to grow the number from the current 55%, which was our achievements as at the end of the first 6 months 2020, to 70% at the end of the mid-term prospect. Here we intend to grow to fast-track mobile-first concept and definitely the website. We intend to make our app and website very high quality to offer the best user experience available in the Russian market. On top of that, we have a number of initiatives to go digital in our stores. These are going to be presented to you later on in this presentation. And one final silo in the omni-channel development strategy is the marketplace, where we would like to bring a diverse assortment to ramp up to 2.4 million SKUs. We also intend to develop the mobile app for our vendors on the dashboards and reporting, and then more opportunities to manage the assortment, the prices, and promote their goods as well. Further, we intend to develop the IT platform with a capex of about 4 billion rubles in the midterm. These investments would mostly be about supporting our logistics growth for the marketplace, UX, and generally the IT. Over to page 6, please. Let's discuss here the other strategic goals of ours, which is about new verticals or the new markets where we intend to go. Two projects for you here as part of our new strategy. One is Zozavr, which is specialized pet supplies shop. We have the pipeline of 500 Zozavr stores in midterm with the share of online sales at about 30% of this chain's revenue. This would allow us to have double-digit market share in the midterm. In order to support the margins in this project, we intend to launch private label categories with goods for pets as well as food produce with a share of 30% in the midterm. This is going to differentiate our offering vis-a-vis the competition by proposing a unique product mix, and then it's going to facilitate the general margin levels of Zozavr. On the digital services side, we intend to launch at least two digital services in the midterm, and that is just the right step, which would take us towards a uniform ecosystem, enabling the company to achieve the following. From the customer's side, that's going to build on the trust they have to Detsky's brand and also reinforce the loyalty program. They will be able to use loyalty points across the board within the ecosystem and also develop the unique customer experience, user experience, again, across the board. We'll also see that as an opportunity to diversify the business, retain and grow the target audience, increase the frequency of tickets and extend the life cycle of each shopper and generally build on long-term relationships with the client. The key digital services development areas have been outlined as follows: health, education, content, entertainment and educational content, other services, adjacent services such as find and babysitter, nanny for your kid, cleaning for your house, and then subscription services. Subscription is going to start as soon as the end of this year. To sum up, in a nutshell, the company intends to build up on its growth story with no less ambitious pace as compared to what we really demonstrated in the past, ramping up our leadership in Goods for Children as an omnichannel player and also improving on the operating efficiency of the business. At this point, I would like to hand over to Anna Germanova, who is going to explain the financial results of Detskim. Thank you, Maria. Good afternoon, colleagues. Before we proceed to our recent financial performance review, let me say just a few words about the COVID-19 pandemic and its impact on Detskim. Please open up page 8 of the presentation. First and foremost, the COVID-19 pandemic lockdown, so the most challenging period that we had, has proven yet another time the fact that Detskim has chosen the right strategy of being the omnichannel retailer with goods for children. Even in the harshest lockdown, we carried on operating our stores. When we shut down 83 stores, half of those were on our own initiatives because they were in large malls. They are in large malls, and with lower traffic, we decided to shut down the stores given the inefficiency. In May, we only had 38 stores shut down, but starting in June, all of them were opened up again. On the revenue side, we only saw a decline in April with 20% fall. In May, the growth was positive already. In June, it was a record high, 22% growth. Here we see deferred demand, of course, and then again, the start of the summer season, hence the growth of the revenues. And another thing, any crisis is a threat on the one hand and an opportunity on the other. I believe that Detskim has managed to build up on its internal resources and opportunities to grow at the times of the COVID-19 pandemic. The sales growth were record heights, like plus 300 times vis-a-vis 2019. And that was managed not because the customer behavior patterns have changed. Let's say they started shopping online very fast, but also because the company managed to restructure internally and restart all its internal processes. We have launched delivery services, which were not the case before, and in May we launched our own courier delivery, which demonstrated very good performance. My colleagues are going to explain that later on. As a result, online sales grew by more than 300 times in Q2, which really supported our sales revenues. Now let's go by slide by slide, starting with the top line. Top line growth, even though it was down in April, still Q2 demonstrated nearly 3% total revenue growth, or 7% year-on-year, 6 months to 6 months. We managed to have 59.8 billion rubles. Like-for-like was positive in Q2 with a lower number of tickets because of lower traffic, because of the government's measures on the lockdown. We still managed to maintain positive like-for-like revenue thanks to 13% upward movement of the average ticket size. And then the retail prices were reviewed upward for the imported goods because of the ruble devaluation. Total like-for-like for the 6 months was 2.4%. And again, pretty much the same. On the e-commerce revenue, here we see more than 300% growth, so we made 8.6 billion rubles in Q2, as you can see in the bottom left. The share of online or e-commerce revenue is up significantly with more than 30%, was more than 20% in the second quarter, more than 30% in the second quarter. After the stores have been opened up again after the lockdown, it's still not significantly down, currently standing at 24.6%. So even though online is growing, offline is growing as well, which makes us really happy. Next page is number 10. A few words about our gross margin. In the second quarter, the company saw its product mix moving down towards low-margin products such as diapers and baby food, which is related to the COVID quite clearly. So in Q2, the gross margin went down by 3%. So of the first 6 months, though, it's less than 3 percentage points. It's just 1.5 percentage points. Please be reminded of our strategy. One of its focus points is about operating efficiency. In Q2, we could really feel the truly efficient strategy of DHK. We managed to offset in full the reduction of our gross margin by taking the SG&A down as well. It's down by 3% of the share of revenue, currently standing at record low of 8.5%. The key drivers as lease are rent, which is down by 3%, and payroll, which is down by 1 percentage point. Please be reminded there are two drivers affecting these numbers. On the one hand, we didn't pay our lease fees and during the lockdown, which supported our EBITDA margin. On the other hand, we managed to gain some significant discounts from the landlords because the malls, well, the malls don't really feel well at home, and our key competitors were shut down as well. So the malls really needed to bring in the traffic and support the traffic. Dietzky performs really well on that side, and we gained significant discounts, which were not one-off, not for April or May alone. That was extended discount, and we keep our dialogue with the landlords to extend the discounts as well. We're confident that rent is going to come down for the full year of 2020 with 2019. On the payroll side, well, only 30% of the payroll is fixed, while 70% is variable, and that has brought the SG&A share down as well. As a result, we managed to have EBITDA margin at 12.3% on par with the previous year, while the EBITDA is up by 3%. And for the first 6 months, adjusted EBITDA is up by more than 9%. And we managed to improve the EBITDA margin by 0.2 percentage points, making 5.8 billion rubles in total. Next page, let's discuss the cash flow conversion. Well, with our business model, with our asset-light business model, we have high ROE and cash conversion. Our ROIC was on par with the previous years, you can see in cash conversion is up from 70 to 89%. On the cash flow side, please be reminded, Dietzky's business is very seasonal by nature because of various payments to our suppliers and vendors. In the first 6 months, we normally pay for the goods procured and sold in the Q4 of the previous year, and also some deliveries of winter collections that is coming on sale later on. So our operating cash flow is normally negative in the first 6 months because of significant investments into working capital. For the 9 months, it's normally closer to zero. And in the fourth quarter, we gain most of our cash flow. On the right-hand side, you can see that back in 2019, the adjusted EBITDA was 14.7 billion rubles, while the operating cash flow was 11 billion rubles, which is very significant, isn't it? Now, at the end of the first 6 months, it's negative, minus 6.6, that's as always, and that is about investing into the working capital. We have two drivers here. One is the expansion of the chain with more procurement volumes and more payments to suppliers and vendors. On the other hand, please be reminded, in the first 6 months, we did additional purchases to mitigate foreign currency risks and maintain additional margins into the future as we sell imported goods. So that is about 1 billion rubles worth of working capital. On the CAPEX side, we only invested into opening new stores and maintaining the existing chain was 670 million rubles. That's less than in 2019. Please be reminded, in the first 6 months of 2019, we had a one-off investment into acquiring a property in Moscow, where we currently have our flagship store. Please continue to page 12 to discuss the financial policy and the debt of the company. The company has traditionally been rather conservative in its financial policy. We bring in only rubles to match the revenue. We work with leading Russian and international banks. As at the end of the second quarter 2020, we managed to take our net debt down from 26 to 24.9 billion, and the leverage is down from 1.9 to 1.6. Our cost of debt is down as well at 7.5% of the weighted average interest rate as of Q2 2020. The bond placement we did in early May of 3 billion rubles worth played an important role here, and the maturity for that placement is 3 years. Please note that as of the end of June, we had more than 27 billion rubles worth of undrawn credit limit, which makes the company very confident in ahead of the high season in the fall, which is upcoming. Over to page 13, let's consider the returns to shareholders and the dividend policy. Please be reminded, we have the dividend policy suggesting that 50% of the net income must be paid as dividend, but historically we have been paying up to 100% of net income under the Russian accounting standards. For 2019, we paid more than 7 billion rubles as dividends. In the first 6 months, 2020, IFRS net income is down by 1 billion rubles, which is mostly driven by FX movements, and we believe that's a one-off effect. And again, in the first 6 months, it's 1.5 billion rubles of unrealized FX losses, but the net income is down by 1 billion only because the rest has been compensated by improved financial performance and the growth of the chain. Please be reminded that the company is paying the dividend based on the RAS net income. The RAS net income is only insignificantly down by 200 million for the first 6 months, so the number currently stands at 1.3 billion rubles. As compared to 1.5 billion rubles for the first 6 months of 2019. This is a very insignificant reduction. We are confident looking into the future, and we believe we can see a very strong improvement in the third quarter this year. Why so? Please be reminded, as of the end of the first 9 months, 2019, we had 3.7 billion rubles of net income under RAS. So in the third quarter alone, we made 60% thereof, or 2.2 billion rubles in total. The company is currently looking up to the high season of the third quarter, so we believe there is no ground to suggest our dividend could come down at all, because there is no reason for that. For doing so, traditionally we pay dividends two times based on the 9 months results and based on the Q4. So we have paid for Q4 last year already. Part of that payment came in July, and the board supported the management's initiative to pay the other part in early October. We are looking forward to the general shareholders meeting. Have every reason to believe this decision is going to be supported, and the payment will be incoming in early October. Now, let's consider page 14 with a guidance update. The company is generally not changing its strategy because we're confident that the omni-channel strategy for children's goods has proven its good efficiency. We provide good returns to the shareholders, so we'll keep building up on our store chain, so we will have at least 70 stores of DSK, mostly in Q4. We also maintain our guidance of opening our standard stores, at least 300 DSK Mir stores in medium term. As Maria has explained, we intend to have at least 800 of Detmir pickup points in medium term, and 10 stores of the new Zozavara format. We also maintain our revenue guidance, as explained earlier. We're also confident that the marketplace, Detmir, pickup points, and Zozavara are going to support our revenue growth on par with what we had in the previous years. And then online revenue to increase from 30% currently to 45%. Adjusted EBITDA, we maintain our guidance that our EBITDA, adjusted EBITDA margin under IFRS 16 and under IS 16 was going to be 10% in the 10% area. It's going to be double digit under IFRS 16. we intend to grow the share of high-margin private label sales to about 60% to offset the investments and maintain the adjusted EBITDA margin. We're also confident that SG&A side of the business will be reduced through improving operating efficiency. On the leverage side, we further confirm our guidance of maintaining conservative financial policy with the target leverage below 2.0 any reporting period in the future. We believe that for our scale, this is very acceptable leverage, which is not going to cause any additional any particular interest burden. On the dividend side, again, we're not changing our dividend policy. It remains with a payout ratio target of at least 50% on IFRS net income. However, the management is going to recommend, as has been the case in the past 7 years, to pay 100% of Russian accounting standards net income. Now, this concludes my section, and we're ready to take your questions. Thank you, Anna. Colleagues, we're ready to start our first Q&A session. Please be reminded, if you'd like to ask your question orally, please click raise hand. And if you would like to ask your question in writing, please click Q&A at the bottom of your screen. Colleagues, the first question, orally. Hendrik, the floor is yours. Please go ahead with the question. We can hear you.
Okay, great. Thanks. So I just wanted to follow up on your revenue comments for July, which is obviously quite encouraging with some revenues by about 24% in the first 2 weeks of July with your trading updates, which implies sort of quite a big slowdown in the second half. So I just wanted to sort of clarify how that ties together with your double digits revenue growth guidance, and sort of can you just confirm what type of growth you came out of July, and maybe if you can give any color on August trading as well. And then the second point, I wanted to follow up on your guidance. I'm listening to the translation, but it sounded like you're saying you're reiterating your revenue and adjusted EBITDA guidance. But looking at the text, it does seem like it's a bit of a cut, I guess, on the EBITDA margin guidance, and you're a little bit more optimistic on revenue on the back of these new formats. Can you just confirm that you're sort of still your high single digits or single digit like-for-like growth for the core business is still what, and similarly double digit IS17 adjusted EBITDA margin for the core business, and any reason why sort of, I guess 10% is a little bit below what you're doing now as these new formats mature, can you get back to this sort of 11-12% EBITDA margin? Thank you.
Good afternoon. Thank you for your question. Let me answer that. You're absolutely right. Our revenue growth engine was quite good. It's double digit. And in the first 23 days of August, it's still double digit revenue growth. It's really difficult to say how the full period is going to be like, because we still have the high season week upcoming, but the first 23 days are encouraging. On the EBITDA, it's higher than 23%. We're still saving on SG&A, and we're maintaining rather high gross margin levels. Now, if we consider our expectations when it comes to the EBITDA margins, thanks to the new formats, that was your question. So we are going to maintain at least the EBITDA margin, at least at the level of 10%. And you have rightly put it, the new initiatives are going to enable us to ramp up the revenue growth as compared to the earlier version of our strategy when these new formats were not part of it. So we're going to make more revenue as compared to the strategy without the new formats. And our EBITDA forecast is very conservative of only 10%. We had the same guidance, EBITDA margin, of course, it's 10% area, but we made 11.4%. In fact, now we're conservative about it, EBITDA margin of 10% area. If we manage to perform better, we'll be happy to disclose. Nothing to hide here. On the like-for-like side, here's the situation. Before 2014, we were confident in saying that our like-for-like would be double-digit. In the recent years, however, it has been variable. That depends on the market. But again, our like-for-like is always better than the key peers on the market. So when it comes to like-for-like, it's going to be pretty much the same as has been in the past, and we're going to overperform the market. Thank you, Anna. We are happy to continue to the next question then. And we have a question from Mr. Maxim Nekrasov. Maxim, we can hear you. Please go ahead. Thank you for your presentation. I have a few questions, frankly. One is about your CAPEX. You have mentioned that you intend to build two federal DCs and three regional DCs on top. And then 2.4 billion of CAPEX is going to be spent to develop your IT platform. Can you please explain how that is going to be distributed and maybe some guidance for this year and for two more years, if I may? Thank you, Maxim, for your questions. Again, Anna is taking the floor. Let me handle that. Well, you have rightly put it. Our strategy provides for significant investments into logistics to maintain the high growth rate that we're promising. That again, given the scale of the business, that is not a significant number. 2 to 2.5 billion rubles are required to open one federal DC, and that's not a significant number. So we intend to open up one in 2022 and another one in 2024, and that includes both the warehouse and the equipment. And on the regional DCs, it's really insignificant. Only 100 million rubles we start saving immediately on the logistical leg. So that investment pays off in the very near future. On the IT side, well, we do intend to invest into IT, and that investment is going to be into both IT development and acquiring the licenses required. In terms of putting a burden on our cash flow, all of that CAPEX plus 100% dividend, it's still all within the target leverage of below 2x, as at the end of each period. So part of these payments will be paid by our operating cash flow with no increase in the debt burden. For this year, we intend to have the CAPEX of 2.5 billion. That's the guidance for 2021. Well, maintenance CAPEX plus the main Detsky stores, it's going to be about 2 billion rubles. With each Zozavar or Detmir pickup points, so it's 1.4 billion rubles in total. And then we intend to have 100 million for each of the regional warehouse. So, and then the IT, so the numbers are not that significant. Understood. Okay, may I ask another question? Yep, please go ahead. On the dividends. Thank you for your answer, Anna. I have a question on the dividends. You're paying under RAS accounts, right? So in case you have some one-off issues on the RAS side, let's say FX or whatever, and the actual net income number is less, but your cash position would enable higher payments. Would you consider any additional means to distribute dividends or other capital to the shareholders, such as buybacks? Thank you. I've got your question, Maxim. Well, as of now, we don't see any particular threat that would target reduced dividend flow under RAS. But in case that happens, we cannot exclude the buyback. Because, again, our debt burden is rather low, and we can see that has been the case throughout. Take a look at all of our guidance numbers. Again, we don't see any threat to have a reduced dividend flow. Understood. Thank you. And thank you, Anna. We're ready to proceed to the next question. Mikhail, please go ahead. Thank you, colleagues. Thank you for this update call. I'm wondering if you're currently disclosing any information on store economics, be it Detmir or Zozava, such as the floor space or capex required. Do you disclose anything? Well, we have detailed information on the key metrics, Mikhail, as part of the presentation, and we're going to dwell upon that in the second part of our session, so we're going to have more details later on. So I suggest that we wait with this question so far. Okay, and then another question on the part that has been delivered already. You target 80% of online sales to be delivered next day. Do you include marketplace in this, or do you mean your main SKU matrix? Mikhail, we are conservative. That's why we're suggesting it's going to be for our main SKUs, and then we'll try to expand that to the marketplace as well. Now, we have an additional comment by e-commerce director Mikhail Peshikov. We have a dedicated session on the logistics, also including e-commerce. In a nutshell, from regional DCs, we intend to have 200,000 SKUs and 2.4 million SKUs to be delivered from the federal DCs. So category A or Cat A is going to be available with regional DCs, and the full assortment would be available from the federal DCs. So Cat A is exactly the 80% target, while with Cat B and Cat C, the full marketplace, it's not 80%, but it's less still. Quite high at 80%, if I'm not mistaken. Thank you. Okay, the next question is coming from Mr. Yevgeny Kirpnis. Please go ahead, Yevgeny. Hello, can you hear me? Yes, we can. Perfect. Sound loud and clear. Thank you for the presentation and my congrats on your great results. I have a couple of questions. One is about your results, whether you're ready to disclose the numbers, like how much is the rent down? What share of stores enjoys a lower reduced rent rates? And for how many would you expect to have additional discounts by the end of the year? And one other question relates to the pipeline of new openings, especially in the new formats, Detmir, Pickup Point, and Zozava. Just to clarify, how are these going to spread across several years? Like you're saying 800 Detmir Pickup Points, 800 is your medium term pipeline. Does this mean 100? 250 to 200 stores per year, or would you rather push that pipeline down the road for a few years later on, and you'll have a reduced run rate? Thank you. On the discounts, well, generally speaking, we're getting these discounts more or less continuously. It's a rollover process, month to month. So for now, we have all of our stores that enjoy a discount, some a higher discount, others a lower discount. We're trying to extend those to a longer time, so to say, but we are absolutely confident that the share of rent as revenue is going to be definitely less than in 2019, and it's going to carry on into the future. because now is just the right time to get the discounts. Well, as for the new store pipeline, we have some very interesting slides in the second half of our presentation where we're going to explain the financial model as well as the pipeline. Okay, we have another question from Alexei Krivoshapka. Alexei, the floor is yours. Colleagues, frankly speaking, I don't have questions. I just must have raised my hand by accident. I'm looking forward to a further presentation from you. Colleagues, we have a couple of questions in writing as well. How is the management thinking about potential sales cannibalization as more Detski Mir are opened as the overall industry growth remains flattish? Well, please be reminded, the sales revenue growth in the past 5 or 6 years has been going on thanks to consolidating the market because the competition was so weak and we were gaining the market share. We have been gaining the market share and we intend to carry on with that and keep consolidating the market. Also, please be reminded, most of the new openings are happening in new cities. That grants zero cannibalization effect. Also, we expect that part of our competitors' stores will be replaced with Detski or superseded by Detski. On the new Detmir pickup point format, that's an absolutely new market. We'll be hitting new cities and towns, hence zero cannibalization. Next question then. How is the level of promo up in Q2 as compared to Q2 2019? What's the dynamics of Q3? In Q2, the share of promos has significantly been increased. So the only exception here is April. The first half of April, I'd say. We were forced to reduce the share of promos at the time. We didn't quite know at the time how the developments would happen, and then we were ramping up promo across the categories, but we don't do that at our own expense. That's the policy of Detski. When it comes to that, all of the promos happen at the expense of the customer, of the vendor, sorry, or at the expense of the vendor. That's exactly what happened in Q2. Then when we determine how much of the promo would suffice, like on the weekly basis, we would analyze the promos and we target more promos with more discounts and better mechanics. In the second quarter, we negotiated with quite a few of our main suppliers and vendors to increase the promo budget, and those negotiations were rather successful because we are a major player and we are growing aggressively ahead of the competition. Thank you, Maria. So we have time for one final question, which you get in writing. What's your new strategy regarding CIS countries like Kazakhstan, Belarus, etc.? Has the COVID-19 pandemic affected your plan for these countries? Thank you. Thank you for your question. We are not changing our strategy on Kazakhstan and Belarus. On top of that, the pandemic has proven that our strategy is resilient. In Kazakhstan, Belarus, we suspended 100 stores because of the lockdown in Kazakhstan, but they were pickup points and still managed to make positive EBITDA, even though most of the chain was shut down because of the lockdown measures. We're absolutely confident about our strategy in these countries, and we'll keep opening stores in Kazakhstan and Belarus. Considering other CIS states, currently have no plans, Zozava and Marketplace are our priority. We'll see how it's going to develop. Maybe next year we'll announce something for other countries. And colleagues, we have another question in writing. And after that one, we're going to proceed with the second part of the session. Here's the question. Please comment on the turnover of your inventories and receivables as at the end of 2020, as you said. Do you have any risk that investments into working cap in 2020 would be higher than in 2019? Thank you for the question. Currently, we see an improvement of our turnover because we're reducing the inventories. We see high demand and high revenue growth. The extra purchase we had to mitigate FX risks during the spring are not affecting our inventories anymore, or the cost side as well. So we don't expect any changes in the turnover or any significant investment into the working capital other than what is required to grow the business. That's quite natural. So the only thing that could affect turnover is additional purchases. Please be reminded, whenever the ruble looks volatile, we try to make additional procurements, additional purchases, if we know that we'll be able to sell these goods later on at higher prices, thus improving our margins. As of today, we don't see any need for additional purchases of the kind, so the turnover today and the receivables, the payables are going to be on par with 2019. Okay, thank you. We're ready to proceed. And let's consider our key strategic initiatives. And the first thing I'd like to start with is the updated strategy. The Russian children's goods market overview comes first. Page 16 gives you an overview exactly thereof. Analysts from Ipsos Comcon suggest that the marketing is going to keep stagnating, demonstrate some close to zero growth levels. Ipsos Comcon has traditionally been targeting cities with 100,000 of population and above. However, in recent years, Detsky has been actively opening in smaller cities of 50 or 60, 100,000. We intend to be actively opening up in even smaller cities of 20 or 30,000. So Ipsos Comcon has added that to their evaluation, so they believe the market is going to grow by 25% to 76 billion rubles. Page 17 now. We would like to explain the government measures to support birth rates and boost disposable income for families with children. Allowance per child has been updated. In the past, it only kicked in for the second child. Currently, it kicks in with the first child already. So we have considered the overarching effect across the year. It's more than 180 billion rubles in total. An indirect impact because people cannot really spend this money in retail stores, but that affects the birth rate positively. So that opens up some of the budget. Some of the household budget, which can be spent in Detsky stores, among other things. We also saw one-off support from the government in the second quarter during the lockdown related to the COVID-19 pandemic. There was a one-off payment of 15,000 per child for children less than 3 years of age, and 10,000 for children three to 16, with a total number of about 500 billion rubles. And again, here they have no limits. People are welcome to spend that in retail stores. We could see that in the market, and we could see that in our stores as well. Now, the population is actively spending in our stores, among other things. So that would allow our industry to be in the money for the full year. Over to page 18. Here, it's important to mark what we're doing with the market environment evolution. We have a children's retail market and general food retailers as compared to specialized stores. The market share is pretty much equal of 39%, while online is the fastest growing, in fact, the only growing channel. So Ipsos Comcon analysts believe that, and we share their view, the contribution of online is going to grow 2.5 times to 40% in total. Now let's consider the key players in the market. Dietzky is clearly the market leader with 26% of the market share in cities with population over 100,000 population. Three times below comes Wildberries. That's a pure play online retailer. Wildberries is demonstrating some very good growth rate at 2 to 2.5 times. Even during the lockdown of Q2, the omnichannel model the omnichannel strategy was very popular with the customers and also in demand. During the peak of the lockdown in April, online sales demonstrated the highest growth pace in online sales, and the share of pickups did not come down significantly, and it ramped up and recovered after the lockdown very fast. Next come classical specialized stores, Dochki, Sinochki, and Karablik. They're losing their share actively. Like Karablik lost quarter of their sales last year. Dochki and Sinochki lost 10%. They were not closing down their stores so actively. So it's difficult for us to say now when they're going to withdraw from the market. And we see these as additional opportunity for us to grow and consolidate the market. One other player is Ozon. Again, pure play e-commerce. Their current share is rather small, but they're demonstrating some good growth pace on par with Wildberries. One final page for this segment. Page number 19. Here I would like to highlight additionally the two important categories of baby food sales and diaper sales, where we compete mostly with food retailers. As you can see from the page, we are demonstrating some good growth pace for our market share. The dry baby food mixes, our share is 50% in Moscow and more than 30% across Russia. That's why we believe Dietzky is a socially important business. That's exactly why we were entitled to carry on operating our stores during the lockdown. On the diapers, bottom part of the page, here you see Dietzky is the absolute leader with more than 30% market share. When the declining market, Dietzky is pretty much the only player increasing the market share. Now we can continue to the next section. Over to Pavel Pishchikov. Thanks, Sergey. Thank you. I'd like to explain what we do with the UX and how we're improving the user experience when interacting with Dietzky. Customer needs are growing all the time. It's not enough to get the best product at the best price and fast. On top of that, they must have a comfortable and convenient user experience, be it online or offline. Our new strategy dedicates special focus on customer satisfaction with their shopping experience with Desky, and the key metric here is NPS. As explained earlier, our strategy targets to increase that from 55 to 70% by 2023. The contribution is made by a number of drivers, such as convenient location, the friendly approach of the staff, speed of the delivery, and reliability thereof, and so on and so forth. However, usability of our websites and mobile apps also have a key influence on NPS. Given that, the UX plays a major role as part of the new strategy. At the end of 2019, we launched Desky's mobile app. The launch was very successful with more than 3.5 million downloads in 6 months. Currently, our app ranks 40th and 15th in shopping category, ranks 15th in the shopping category. In the past, it was 64% with 34% coming from desktops. Currently, 85% of the traffic is coming from mobile devices. More than half of all purchases are made using our mobile app. Given that, we focus on developing the mobile app, of course, expanding its functions, which is still lagging behind the functions available or the functionality of the website. We would like to target mobile-first development in 2020, and we expect the functionality of the mobile app to outpace that of the mobile website. We would like to make it the best app in the shopping category in the midterm. That's why we have outlined key functionality and how, or roadmap, if you wish, to develop the app. We have that strength at Tier 1, Tier 2, and Tier 1. So I'd like to move from Tier 3 to Tier 2 now, and would like to achieve that by 2021 to 2022. So then over to the next page. Here you see the functionality which is going to be implemented in the mobile app in the very near future. We're going to have a new personal account, which would be uniform account with a website and subscription functionality to get diapers and baby food that you need regularly. We have the new shopping cart checkout, which has improved conversion by 11%. Currently, we're beta testing that. Apple Pay and Google Pay is going to be added very soon, as well as the possibility to link your bank card. So that is just a small portion of functionality to be added in the very near future. We have changed our approach to priority ranking the tasks. In the past, we looked at the commercial numbers, like improving the margins, reducing the costs, bringing up new revenue, while the new strategy suggests we also include into the ranking the user experience metrics. So now we have feedback collected from the customers. We use targeted studies and surveys, as well as customer experience surveys, with Mystery Shopper program launched as well. Analyzing this feedback, we identify the improvement areas where we have dedicated tasks set. This may not affect sales or income, but high loyalty of our customers definitely to be converted into higher commercial numbers. Page 23, we have a significant volume of additional free traffic. Please be reminded that we have the best traffic and the best website. So we'd like to have all needs of mom and her baby covered. Like in case they need any goods or service, they open Desky app without losing time to search on the web. In order to achieve that, we would like to develop our digital products as an ecosystem, not only offering children's goods, but also adding additional digital services. We're still at the beginning of this road, having identified key improvement areas such as DM Health, for example, remote medicine or entertainment, cleaning, babysitting, school training, etc., or digital content such as paid access to cartoons and online games, or training programs and tutors, sale and purchase of used goods between customers and premium access to exclusive discounts. We are looking into the options we have in each of these segments. For example, we could partner up with some existing services in the market or create new services from scratch. Integrating that into Detsky ecosystem is about bringing free traffic of a loyal audience that trusts the brand of Detsky Mir. They're used to the ecosystem, they're used to getting good support. On Detsky, additional traffic and additional audience may be coming with this traffic, and there's a means to monetize that, and then we can build a longer-term relationship with the customers. The Detsky brand is the best to tackle this task. We would like to implement two of such services this year to build up and develop the business model and come up with our plan up until 2023. In this section, I would like to explain our new project, which is Marketplace. One of the company's strategic development priorities is about setting up Beam's marketplace. That's our vision, why we decided to do that at Detsky. Please be reminded, the product mix is the best competitive advantage of online stores. We have seen that online stores with broader set of SKUs are winning across the world and also in Russia. Our customers capable of finding just the right product for their kids in the Detsky app, and we would like them to do the same. They don't need to search for goods elsewhere. They open up Detsky app and search for what they need. Detsky enables great product assortment management, so the vendors are welcome to manage their assortment and advertising at a much lower cost as compared to classical retail. Using e-commerce infrastructure and low marketing costs, it's much cheaper to build the marketplace within DM's environment. We'd like to focus on FMCG and fashion in mid to mid-high price segments. We intend to ship from our warehouses, charging a commission from the vendors. In the future, we'd like to test adjacent categories going beyond children's goods, but taking into account Detsky's mere target audience. Page 26. See how DM's marketplace would offer a compelling CPV to shoppers and merchants alike. It will be convenient and it's going to have lowest price promise. They will continue to transact with Detsky Mir, a trusted provider. They will be familiar with order pickups and they will be part of a loyalty program, while merchants are going to have access to massive traffic of customers in Detsky's app. They'll have access to loyal audience and a convenient way to manage their inventory and easy access to API or using their account setup and convenient delivery opportunities. Page 27. We don't split 1P and 3P for the customer. So it's our goods and third-party products. So it's still same catalog. You could see that in the same search output, and it would be the same convenient way for the customers to select the goods. They have the account for the merchants as well. They can create products and description. They can set prices and generate warehouse shipment orders. In the future, we expect to expand the list of features to join promotional events and offers, see price analytics, so that they could respond to customer feedback and use our advertising tools. Then we'll see fulfillment commission to be carved out from the overall commission of the marketplace. Our target is to have the broadest range of goods for children in Russia. Traditionally, we had 20 to 30,000 SKUs in the stores and 50 to 60,000 SKUs on the warehouses available online. We'd like to ramp up to 200,000 SKUs before the end of this year and expand further to 2.4 million SKUs by 2024. As you can see, the current SKU list for Ozon is 665,000, and Wildberries have 1.8 million. So obviously, if our competitors improve, we'll rank up our targets as well. We'd like to be the number one seller of children's for goods and intend to have the largest share of marketplace in our sales. On top of that, we would like to test other categories adjacent to goods for children, having focused on goods for children, like to go beyond it, but rather I'm talking about 2024 and 2025 onwards. That's it for my section. Over to Farid Kamalov, our COO. Thank you, Pavel. I'm going to present section 6 of the presentation with digital transformation of the retail channel. Let's start with the three key projects up until 2024. Our largest project, as you hear from Maria, is the new format of Detmer pickup points, or PUPs. That's our internal name for it so far. The pipeline is about 800 stores in the medium term, or 1,200 stores in the longer term. And another project is about in-store 2.0 to modernize and expand online order pickups and fulfillment within the existing DM Classic stores to build up on the feedback collected by Pavel Pishikov's teams. And finally, third project, Deskimir 3.0, a full digital transformation and modernization of all stores to make them fully online and pickup capable. The clients would like to see different and would like to transform accordingly. Now, page 32, in order for you to understand what we get at the end of this, let us explain the embedded format strategy. Well, the format of all these matryoshkas, well, like for all these matryoshkas, you have a pickup point. You can pick up the goods at any of the matryoshkas. So the flagship is 2,500 to 450 square meters stores. The Detmer PUPs are represented by the blue matryoshkas, covering from 100 to 200 square meters of floor space. That is going to be about 300 stores of Detskimir and 800 of Detmer PUP. Now, the following page, number 33, why Detmer PUPs? The answer is very straightforward. First and foremost, we'd like to expand addressable offline market in two smaller towns, which are unable to support a full DM store. Secondly, we continue to grow the chain once the core format approaches full penetration. Thirdly, small cities have least competitions, so capture market share in geographies with less competition. And finally, but no less important, the most important, I think, is enhance online order pickup delivery reach and share of sales. We need these contacts with customers where they would be able to pick up their orders. So the market size of children goods is about 706 billion rubles. So it's 10 to 100,000 of population which we target. Currently, we have 273 cities and 80 million of the Russian population, which is about 70% of the urban population in this country. Now, in the midterm, we intend to open DM stores in 85 more cities and have Detmer PUPs in 315 stores, thus ramping up from 78 to 93% coverage. Next page, number 34, just to respond to a question asked in the first Q&A session, let me explain what Detmer PUP is about, the format profile as well as store-level economics. That's 1 to 200 square meters, 80% selling area of total area, 2,000 SKUs, the most demanded products. So we're going to have all classical tools that we use. So it's 10 to 50,000 small town catchment areas, and we intend to have 50 offline to online sales. One other important thing for all of this to happen, we need to have fast delivery, next day delivery from regional DC. Over to compelling store level economics. I would like to explain what we have already. It's not something we think would happen, We have 5 stores which have already proven the numbers. So we have 29% gross margin, high single-digit EBITDA margin, and the break-even, EBITDA break-even, is under 1 year. So it's a 3-year ramp-up period, 3-year payback period, IRR of 30%, and a rather low capex of 3 to 4 million as compared to classical Detmer, which is 14 million. Next page. Now, the BUP layout, that's optimized for the high share of digital strategy, and also customer needs and customer demands, including the NPV and the NPS, of course. Considering the selling floor, about 20% is going to be used for backroom storage and technical. The rest is just selling floor, as is the case for DSQ. We're very careful about our staff. It's 2 or 3 people involved. They're universal. They are ready to act as cashiers or do the pickup for the orders. We have a dedicated checkout area with 2 cash registers, which we need so that the store carries on operating regardless of any technical glitches, because we need to issue receipts. The pickup zone is split into returns or exchanges and shelves and lockers for online orders. We don't want to mix the customers in the two areas. Now, we have 2,000 SKUs available on the selling floor, the most demanded product of daily use that must be available at all times. We have apparel and shoes, and also a terminal for in-store orders. It must be available at all pickup points of ours. Well, the key thing here is that we have the design replicating the website and the mobile app so that the clients would have a clear link, the website, the app, the pickup point, and then that's an unlimited shelf available on the website, which you can pick up the next day. It's available on the terminal, in the store, on the mobile app, or on the website. Now, the 5 BUPs we currently have are called Cluster 1, 195 square meters. So Cluster 1 is the was used to calculate our pipeline of 800 plus stores in the midterm. We also intend to have cluster 5, cluster 3, and cluster 4 to reduce the total area, the selling space, and also the capex and the number of SKUs, and also going into smaller cities or towns to ramp up to potential 1,200 new stores in the pipeline. Page 37 gives you the rollout plan, and again, it's important for the customers to understand they can pick up next day the products available on their limited shelf of their online stores. And here we have the key bottleneck is 500 kilometers regional DC coverage. You're going to hear more on that from Denis Gurov. Page 38, here's BUP's assortment strategy. Again, that's the current split in the stores already in operation. The offline to online split is 50-50, as you can see. With apparel and footwear, currently they contribute about 13% out of the total. The model has the same number for this, but we see an upside potential. Classic DM stores demonstrate apparel and footwear sold at 32-33% in total sales. Next page, number 39, over to the next project of ours, in-store zone 2.0 and the current existing stores. Now, some of our stores need to be upgraded because of the growing share of online sales. Now, let me explain why. When we developed this area, we didn't expect such a high share of online sales, so the pickup areas are available, but they don't target the share of online sales by more than 25%. As we grow this area, this damages the look and the layout of our selling floor, and this does not improve the convenience of picking up the goods. Now, what we intend to do, we intend to move part of that area into our back room, so we'll have dedicated personnel taking these goods to the clients. So in the back room, it's more condensed storage area, so that would enable us to give the selling floor back to the actual sales, or have a dedicated cashier. Customers really want to see a dedicated cashier in the stadium. With the help of this area, we'll be managing the traffic. In order to get into that area, they need to go through the selling floor of the store, thus improving the sales and cross sales. So, in 2020, we opened 17 areas of this kind. In 2021, we intend to have another 100 to be reformatted. And again, that's going to be part of our other project, Detsky Mir 3.0, which is going to be the upgraded layout for the classical large DM store. Page 41 gives you a quick overview of Detsky Mir 3.0. What the project is about, we intend to introduce the following changes. First and foremost, we would like to change the logistics, in-store logistics for online sales, and we'd like to reduce the resources available maintain the service level of 90% of goods picked up in the first hour. Now, self-checkouts can go, we have a dedicated area where all of the problems could be solved or all the questions could be answered. Unified zone for all shopper services, which we call CSC, Client Service Center. Then we would like to have the digital identity with infinite shelf concepts. Customers need to understand this store is linked to the website and also to the mobile app. Now we have digital tools within the project, which are mostly about optimizing the costs. We want to have a self-checkout scan and go area, so hand transfer cashier service to our shoppers, or even no checkout with the scan and go functionality. We'd also like to revert to electronic price tags. Our key strategic cutting edge is about price monitoring and pricing. We'll be able to reduce on the labor costs if we want to change the prices in an offline store, and also mobile app for employees, so that I will have 14,000 employees. We would like them to get fast, dedicated tasks and perform better. I have a new cockpit now. Once a client makes an order online, that would be available on the tablet of the dedicated person in the pickup area who'd be actually doing the pickup. That enables us to move much faster. And finally, page 42, I'd like to change the visuals as well. We have a pitch proposition, pitch concept with Mega Topley Stand flagship store to be opened in December this year. We'd like to replicate that a little bit with clear and more accessible navigation, because that's the feedback we're getting from our customers. We'll be using that concept only for the new stores. And most importantly, the cost of the new concept is on par with the cost of the old concept. So the economics model would go into be the same. Over to Denis Gurov, our head of logistics. Thank you, Farid. I would like to explain section 7, which is about omnichannel logistics. So page 44 is currently on your screen. As explained by Maria earlier, we're improving our logistics competences, which is the integral part and the key part of our omnichannel strategy. We would like to be closer to our customers and ensure convenience and delivery pace coming from our DCs and also stores. Thanks to the omnichannel strategy, we have the competitive advantages vis-a-vis the online players, and we target a half in-store pickup as the key growth point for our revenue. We already offer a broad range of delivery channels and see the potential in improving the pace and reducing the costs. Over to page 45. Our logistical infrastructure is comprised of main DCs, or federal DCs, and then regional DCs. Federal DCs would be capable of housing 2.4 million SKUs, our own goods, as well as the marketplace. We deliver to all offline stores as well to the regional DCs. And then we also ensure courier delivery to the customers, but it's only convenient for shoppers in cities nearby. We would like to move closer to our customers with regional DCs with 5 to 10,000 square meters, capable of housing 200 up to 200,000 most popular SKUs, and ensure next-day delivery to our customers and stores within the radius of 500 kilometers, thus reducing our logistical costs by cutting down on the delivery leg. We also have fast delivery, express delivery from the stores within several hours. That's the unique competitive advantage that DM has, and not a single online player in the Russian market is capable of offering this service level. Page 46, how we see our development looking forward. Currently, we have two federal DCs in the Moscow region. This year, we launched a regional DC in Rostov. We currently lease in that and fully operate it. This regional DC is overperforming by 70% for online sales. In the first quarter of 2021, we'll be opening another regional DC in Kazan. However, we'd like to test the 3PL model so that we could pick the right model looking forward for the regional DCs. Our plans before the end of 2022 include include two more in St. Petersburg and Novosibirsk, and also in 2020, we're going to open one in the Urals, and then we'll pick one region to open the federal DC at a later stage, thus expanding our coverage significantly. Page 47, our strategy provides that 80% of all orders must be delivered next day. I'd like to explain how this works using the example of Rostov DC. Please be reminded, in each store we have about 30,000 SKUs available for next day delivery. However, if customers wanted a broader range of SKUs, that would be delivered from the federal DC, and the delivery time could be more than a week. Once the regional DC was opened in Rostov, the matrix of 200,000 SKUs would became available for next day delivery. That allows us to open 200 Detmir pickup points with the target service level and availability. As explained earlier, the capital investment required is minimal, with 5 to 10,000 square meters of regional DC. Again, that's leased space, and we invest about 100 million rubles into IT and equipment. Thank you. Over to Maria Davidova. Yep. Let's continue with page 49. That's the final section of this presentation, and one other remaining strategic project of ours. Let's talk about Zozavr. Why Zozavr? I would like to explain that we see here a good opportunity for us to consolidate the growing market, the good and growing market of goods for pets, which has a great synergy with our traditional market of goods for children. Considering the market itself, well, it is large and it is growing. In 2020, the market size is going to be close to 300 billion rubles in annual sales this year, and the growth pace outpaces that of goods for children. So that's about 9% CAGR, about 9% CAGR in the midterm. The key growth drivers include the rising pet ownership rate, and we see that as a major global trend. Some couples are ready to have a pet rather than have a child. With the birth rate slugging, the share of pets per household is going to be growing. We also see an increase in consumption of goods for pets and food as well, because pets are becoming more of a family members, and that's a trend of associating with your pet, if you wish. And we see a low elasticity to macro as children's goods. So people are not inclined to save on their kids, and the same applies to their pets, even when the times are harsh. We see great synergy when it comes to our main business as well. And we see a high degree of target customer and supplier overlap. Many families with children have pets as well. We have built up some statistics, and we see that a significant share of orders Zozavra placed with the DM's loyalty card, and that includes both goods for pets and goods for children. So that's a convenient way for our shoppers to get the products they need. We also see good opportunities to penetrate into this market and make this an efficient business. We'll be able to leverage in our existing infrastructure and resources. For example, we have the delivery channels such as DM stores as pickup points, for example. I'd like to underline it here, not a single competitor in the pet market has a comparable number of retail outlets, hence availability to customers. On top of that, we have DM's online platform readily available, which you could leverage upon, talking about the website, the mobile app, and also the marketplace, of course. So we're doing exactly the same with Zozavra as we do with Vietsky. I also see great synergy to use infrastructure, the shared infrastructure, the warehouses, the IT, etc. And obviously, we have great financial and management resources as compared to other players in the market. And finally, we get the scale effect from our main business. We'll be able to reduce the costs for construction and rental fees as well. Since Dietzky is already an anchor tenant in the children goods market, we are in a position to gain more attractive rental rates for Zozavra as well. As a result, we're confident that high operating efficiency and the omnichannel business model of Dietzky would enable it to penetrate into the pet market rather fast with minimal investment, ramp up the revenues and the market share. Let's continue to page 15. Let us discuss very briefly on what the pet market or pet supplies market is about. Let me reiterate, the pet supplies retail market is already quite sizable in this country, but we are confident that the growth outlook is even better. In the past periods, it has been growing at 10 or 11%, which is, again, much faster than was the case for the goods for children. Looking into the future, the growth pace would be expected to be above 9% in pet food and more than 7% in other pet supplies, which explains why this is such an attractive market. Over to page 51. Just a few words about the competition. We see this as a great opportunity to gain a sizable share of a fragmented market, and it is not at all consolidated. The top five competitors currently contributing 8% of their combined market share. All of these players mostly operate in limited areas of only two regions, Moscow region and St. Petersburg. So the largest of the competitors here is Beethoven, and Four Paws, or Chutirlape, have a market share of 2.7% and a limited number of stores, 1 to 200. We know that all of these are much below Dietzky in terms of operating efficiency, which serves to prove the same point. Again, these competitors are not doing rollout beyond Moscow and St. Petersburg. Please be reminded that our competitors are really weak when it comes to online sales. Speaking of the online sales, by the way, according to analysts, it was only 7% in 2019. Online sales is also very fragmented, with a huge number of small internet stores who operate in the regions, which serves to prove we have a great opportunity to consolidate this market on the online side of it, thanks to our successful omnichannel model. Let's continue to page 52. Just a few words about our concept. about our format. We have tested that, and we have established the format we would like to develop in the midterm and as our brand, and also the key parameters, the key metrics thereof. We see the optimal size of 100 to 150 square meters. That's a rather compact store with 80 to 100 square meters of selling area. The locations are ideally at shopping centers, but street retail with a high pedestrian and car traffic, I can say that shopping centers would ideally be located closer to a food operator, which generates high traffic guaranteed. Now, comprehensive assortment, that's a broad range of assortments across the board, including veterinary prescription drugs. So our matrix is 6,500 SKUs in store and 10,000 SKUs available online. We tend to grow the online side by adding SKUs, more SKUs as part of our marketplace project. Zozavo is closely integrated with DM. We provide our customers with a uniform loyalty program and a uniform online shopping on the website and the mobile app. So it's the same baskets and same pickup. Pickup is available in stores of both formats, be it Bielski or Zozavr, which is very convenient indeed. So we are offering the possibility to pick up from 850 stores across the country, which is not available from any competitor in the pet market. And finally, omnichannel pricing and best price policy makes us our lowest price amongst specialized pet suppliers, retailers, as is the case with DM in children's goods. So aggressive pricing policy. Now, page 53. Let me say a few words about Zozavr format economics, which we're going to roll out looking forward. Starting with our targets that are part of this chain strategy, the capex is rather limited because of the limited floor space in these stores. And then again, we have the scale effect because we open many stores in total, including Bielski. So the capex is only going to be 3 to 4 million rubles per each store. The IRR target is 30% on 7-year cash flows, while the EBITDA break-even is coming in under 1 year. And the share of private labels in the medium term is about 30%. So that really improves the overall margins, standing at 38% of gross margin by year five, when we have the PL of 30%. Over to page 54. Well, I would like to explain here the progress that the company has managed to achieve so far as our pilot program for Zozavr. By now, we have opened 11 pilot stores in Moscow region, and one store in Tambov. Before the end of 2020, we intend to have another 10 added to the list. Online sales started at the end of 2018, which is also the case for the full project of Zozavr, and currently they contribute 50%, more than 50% of the revenue. In Q2, as you can see in the bar chart, it was as high as record high, 57%, given the COVID-19 lockdown. Also, by the way, the offline Zozavr sales per square meter did not come down during the lockdown. Instead, they're growing steadily, so we overperformed all our sales revenue targets. Pet supplies stores were not subject of a lockdown, similarly to food retail. So all of our stores kept operating throughout the lockdown, and the market has proven its resilience to the crisis, to the coronavirus. People don't save on their pets. Having piloted the format, we decided to roll out the chain. Our key next steps include 70 new stores in 2021, and in the medium term, we intend to get to 500 stores. Then we'll be developing online offering in parallel with store rollouts using DM's infrastructure. That's important. That's why I'm reiterating it yet again. So all of the tools available are already on the table. We don't need to set up anything new. This concludes our section on Zozavr and also the full presentation. I suggest that we thank you very much for your attention. I suggest that we carry on with your questions. Please go ahead. Thank you, colleagues. Again, we're starting our second Q&A session. Please be reminded, if you wish to ask a question orally, please click raise hand at the bottom of the screen. If you'd like to submit your question in writing, please click on the Q&A. And we have our first question from Hendrik Herbst. Please go ahead, Hendrik.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks very much again. I had a few questions, actually. The first one is, in terms of the pet care rollout, will all stores be independent, or can you sort of squeeze them into your existing children's or core format stores? The other thing I wanted to ask is, in terms of cash requirements as you set up these businesses, I mean, it sounds like there's a lot of synergies, but in terms of working capital requirements, etc., are there any other sort of cash requirements in the early phase versus than 3 to 4 million of capex? I guess that's the same in the compact stores. And then, how do you think about acquisitions in the pet care market? I mean, it seems like your competitors are pretty subscale and might be looking to. I mean, I guess to get going with a private label strategy, getting to scale quite quickly is pretty important. And when it comes to the private label strategy, have you already sort of secured agreements with suppliers, or where are you on that, please? I think that was it. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your questions, Hendrik. Let me handle that. Well, your first question is about whether we could integrate Zozavr into Dietsky or have them as standalone. The answer is we don't intend to integrate these because we see certain risks in terms of our image perception, because, you know, food for pets is somewhat of a different story. Because that smells sometimes, we decided not to mix it into our product proposition. However, we see some synergies because we'll try to open stores in same locations in one and same mall, let's say, which would enable us to save significantly on logistics and also have the in-store orders picked up in the same location, so that's the same convenience. Considering additional capital required, well, frankly speaking, we don't see any additional requirements, because Dietsky has the infrastructure, development capex, and that has been explained already. So all of these costs would cover not only Dietsky's needs, but also Zozavr's needs. That infrastructure would be available to Zozavr. Now, marketing. We intend to do some marketing, but the marketing expenses will be offset by the vendors, the suppliers, as is the case for Dietsky. I guess that's it.
Thanks. And just follow up, but could you look at acquiring any of these smaller competitors in the pet care space, or will it mainly be an organic sort of rollout? Thank you.
Well, you know, we have been thinking, and we are thinking, and we are looking at the market to understand the proposals that could be on the table. On the pet side of the business, frankly, we have had these discussions with a large number of players. We did some due deals, but frankly speaking, we have not identified any particularly interesting options. We see that growing organically is a much cheaper option for us. So far, that's the case. Thank you, Henrik, for your question. And we have another question coming from Igor Makeev. Igor? Well, in the meantime, we can continue to the next question from Alexei Krivoshapka. Please go ahead. Colleagues, good afternoon again. Thank you for your very detailed presentation indeed. I'd like to ask the following. Pet supplies segment. What's the share of food retailers? Because you're only showcasing specialist retailers, but again, food for pets is available in hypermarkets and supermarkets. What's their share? And one other question, what's the concentration of suppliers? Like, I understand that food is a major portion. What's the share of Nestle and Mars? Thank you, Alexei, for your questions. I'm going to handle the first one, the share of food retail. The food retailers have about half of the market, but we also understand that's a growth opportunity for us. We also understand we'll be competing against food retailers given pretty much the same strategy as is the case with goods for children. Like lowest prices, best assortment, and omni-channel approach, which is very convenient for the customers. And Maria is going to handle the second part of your question. Yep, the vendor concentration. As is the case with any market, there is some share of consolidation, which is growing with time. Mars and Nestle have about 50-60%. So that's until today, before the PL has been launched. We expect private label products to contribute about a quarter of the food revenue in pet supplies, and that's exactly the share that we see with our competitors in the market. Okay, thank you. So another question by Henrik. Henrik, please go ahead.
Well, sorry, I didn't actually mean to raise my hand again. But I can ask a question, actually. I mean, it is quite a big step up in your expansion. You're launching into regions where you're currently not present, and you're expanding into new formats quite rapidly. I mean, it's quite ambitious targets into new stores. What would you say are the sort of main risks here? Is it to not be able to find the right venues, enough good employees, or what could go wrong here? I mean, you're stretching yourself a little bit more than you have in the last few years in terms of expansion. Thanks.
Let me handle this question. Well, we don't see risks here when it comes to growing our initiatives. We don't see that as stretching our resources or anything. Please be reminded that the CAPEX needs, which we have disclosed for Zozava and also the Detmir PFPs, are rather low. So we're talking here about 3 to 4 million of CAPEX for each Zozava store. In the recent years, we have been growing the chain and funding that with our operating cash flow. The new initiatives also ensure positive free cash flow for the company, and that is going to help us fund the growth. Please be reminded that one of our key guidance highlights in the midterm is the leverage of net debt to EBITDA is less than 2x. So this serves to prove, again, that the majority of CAPEX will be funded with our own cash flow. Let me add here, we see that as an opportunity rather than the risk. When it comes to tapping into the regions, let me explain. Specialized, i.e. independent retailers, still play a key role in the regions. As of today, as Dietzky penetrates into those small regional locations, it cannibalizes rather fast those competitors. They shut down pretty much immediately and we take over their traffic and their revenues. So we see that as an opportunity rather than a threat, especially when it comes to Detmir PUP. Thank you. And we proceed with our next question. Elena, the floor is yours. Good afternoon. Thank you for your very good presentation. I have two questions. One is about marketplace. How are you going to account for marketplace results in your financials? And what could be the impact on your revenue and the EBITDA as recently as in 2021? That is my first question. Thank you for your question, Lena. On the revenue side, well, we don't provide any particular guidance for the group or for the segments. As for marketplace, we expect marketplace to have at least double-digit share of our or double-digit contribution in our online sales, and it's definitely going to be significant for the business in general and for our e-commerce part in particular. So the EBITDA to GMV is going to be high single digit. That's our expectation. That's the EBITDA margin, of course. Then EBITDA to revenue, like revenue received from the commission, that's going to be more than 10%, which is double digit again. If you have any follow-up questions, you're welcome. Yes, I do. What's the commission rate for GMV? Well, we only provide a range of 20 to 25%. That's our guidance. That depends on the category, of course. We intend to consolidate this market rather aggressively, mostly competing against Wildberries and Ozon. So our commission rate is going to target the key online pure players. Question, then, would Wildberries and Ozon have similar commission levels? Or your levels are going to be less than the competition? Do you have any information on that? Let me put it this way. Wildberries and Ozon have different approaches to setting their rates. They have a fixed rate both companies, Wildberries and Ozon, can have that lower than 20%. And on top of that come additional services. But we also understand that without those additional services, the sellers would be incapable of selling their products successfully. And the all-in rate is going to be higher than what we currently target. So as we set the fixed rate of 20 to 25%, that includes all the services that we can provide. So that's why we believe our rate is going to be quite aggressive and will be more attractive to the vendors, to the insellers, as compared to Wildberries and Ozon. Thank you. I have another question then, also related to the marketplace. Like, why did you decide not to let the customer know that they're buying 1P product or 3P product? First-party product or third-party product. Can you comment why did you decide not to make that known? Thank you for your question. Pavel Pishikov has taken that question. Thank you. As explained throughout the presentation, we dedicate a lot of attention to the shopping experience and its convenience, and any split of the product assortment into tiers or groups really makes things more complicated. There are certain constraints, as you can understand. In terms of our logistics on the website or elsewhere, we don't really need to split those processes in any way. That's why we have used this possibility to have a uniform channel and a corridor, if you wish, which they can shop at and then get the product delivered by our courier or pick up at the pickup point, etc. That's true. But will you be able to deliver marketplace products next day, really? Because the supplier would need to get that to your warehouse, to your DC, right? No. That's quite the other way. They first deliver it, and then we sell from our DC. So all of the logistics is the same, 1P or 3P. They're stored at the same warehouses, federal DCs, and they get picked up at the same time. The only difference is the regional DCs that we are going to open up will have marketplace goods as well, but the ones in high demand. Like the federal DCs will have 2.4 million SKUs, and the regional DCs, it would be like 200,000. So next day delivery would be available for 200,000 SKUs, and the others ones at a slower pace. Understood. Well, what you're talking about is 2P then. That's the term I'm used to, because when you say 3P normally means delivery by vendor. Okay, I understand your answer. And then I have another question on the CAPEX side. I didn't quite catch that. What's your CAPEX guidance on IT and logistics? You're saying that the total CAPEX for IT, including logistics, is going to be 4 billion rubles, but then two more DCs, each at 2.5 billion rubles. I understand these are separate numbers, right? 4 billion is for IT, and on top of that come 2.5 times 2, right? No, not quite. 4 billion as additional CAPEX we need to develop the IT side of the business, which includes IT infrastructure, expansion, and also equipment that we need for major warehouses. The number of 2.5 billion per federal DC includes construction and equipment costs. I have tried to calculate the average annual CAPEX for 3 to 4 years to come, including the plans you have announced, and it seems to me a CAPEX is going to be as high as 9 billion rubles, and I have not included in-store experience 2.0 renovation. Is this the right number? And so, no, that's a wrong number. We only have two large federal disease. One is pending in 2022, the other one is pending in 2024. Even if these cost 2.5 billion rubles, plus again, 4 billion rubles is not annual, that's mid-term. So span that across several years, that will be 1 billion per year. So peak capex when we open a federal DC would be 3.5 billion rubles. The highest, and maintenance capex is less than 1 billion. So then we'll have capex for new store openings. So only 3 to 4 million for the Zavra and the PUPs, and 100 million rubles for regional DC. So 9 billion is definitely a wrong number. In peak year, in any peak year, it could be high or significant, but definitely much below 9 billion. Okay, we're going to redo the numbers because we have included all the pickup points in Zavra and then the rollout of your DM chain. So we have an understanding that to open 100 stores per year of DM format, you spend about 1.5 billion, right? And so, no, excuse me for interrupting. Normally, we spend about 1 billion for the store chain rollout because that was 13 to 14 million per store. But very often, we replace a competitor. And we can say on the CAPEX, in the recent couple of years, it's 1 billion for 100 stores. Okay, thank you for your clarifications. Thank you for your question. Next comes a question from Mr. Maxim Nekrasov. Maxim, please go ahead. Hello. Good afternoon again, or good evening. I have a question on your margin guidance, referring to page 14 of the presentation. It's more conservative guidance, like in the past, it was to be a double digit. Now it's around 10 area for the old format. For the IS617, I'm wondering why you expect some pressure on your margins. Is that related to marketplace investment or small formats with additional pressure or total investments? So why is that? Well, you see, we're rather conservative in our forecast. In the past, it was at least 10% for the EBITDA margin. We normally had 11.4, but the guidance was at least 10%. We maintain it around that area, 10% area. So we understand that in the early years of the new strategy, the EBITDA margin could be somewhat less than what we had with a mature network, a mature chain. That's quite normal because it takes some time to ramp up. And then the margins would be growing in the future. That's a very conservative guidance, that's it. In terms of any pressure, here's the situation. Well, debt mirror PUPs have somewhat less margin as compared to the mature store of our DM format. But again, their margin is 14%. So the PUPs may have have less of a margin, but it's still above 10%. On Zuzavr, it's going to be less until the point in time when we launch the private labels, but these have a high margin, which is going to take our margin much higher. Understood. Thank you. Thank you for your question. Our next question comes from Mr. Murat Ibrahimov. Please go ahead. Thank you for a very detailed presentation. I have several questions. How are you going to recognize the revenue, GMV, or your commission for marketplace? Marat, could you please repeat your question, albeit a bit louder? Maybe we're not hearing you well enough. Here's my question again. When you sell marketplace goods, how are you going to recognize the revenue, GMV, or the commission that you charge from the vendor? Anna is going to comment on that. Well, in terms of our management accounts, we'll be showing GMV. In terms of the financial accounts, there are certain rules for those. So we're not going to hide anything. We'll be showing both the GMV and the commission that we make. Question, then IFRS revenue will be the commission, right? Answer, right. So as you grow marketplace and your EBITDA margin is set to grow, right, as the share of marketplace proves. Yes, that's correct, mathematically. And the early on, when the marketplace doesn't contribute that much, it's going to be more moderate, but then it's going to be higher. Okay, another question on the PUPs then, because you're going to open up, you have opened up pilot stores in Moscow and Tambov, which are completely different when it comes to the disposal of income. I understand you have picked Tambov in order to test the concept. Can you explain how much the economics would be different? Understood your question. It's not PUP, it's Zozavr. But this doesn't really matter because we have tested the PUPs both in Moscow and in the regions, and the trend is observed exactly the same as is the case with Detsky. The disposable income is different, but the economics per store is pretty much the same. The revenues are growing not as high, but the costs are low as well, so the EBITDA margin is on par in Moscow and in the regions. The same is the case with Zozavr. Zozavr demonstrates the same level of the margins, be it in Moscow and the regions. Thank you. Then how about the offline stores of Detsky? You have a feature because you have traffic builders at the closer to the back room, and as customers walk through, they shop for what they need and what they can pick up on the way. So this doesn't work online. How are you going not to lose on as you get more of online sales? Is my question clear? Yeah, understood. Now, I'm in charge. That's Pavel speaking. I'm in charge of e-commerce. Well, frankly, online is a great channel in terms of promo management, like half of the sales has promo attached, so we manage that online no worse than we do with online, and we can manage the margins as we see fit. So the economics is somewhat different, online and offline, but economics, the margins are pretty much comparable. Question, how do you manage that then? Like you know the customer and you offer some context to advertising or AdWords or something? We mostly promote with push notifications and with a mobile app and also email lists. Like we don't pay for the traffic. So we offer those goods with the promos where we have the margins well calculated. Thank you. Understood. That's it for my questions. Okay. We are ready to proceed with the questions that have been put forth in writing. Could you please explain in depth the new digital services? Which ones are you going to pilot in 2022? How are you going to work with the health services and looking for staff and personnel such as babysitters? Well, Pavel Pishkov, I'm in charge of e-commerce. We're early on in that process, so we wouldn't really want to open up everything. It's still early into this process. One of the first digital services to be launched would be the catalog of other apps within the Detsky's environment, such like kind of a mini store. The mom or even the kid would be able to use other apps available. Like they wouldn't really need to have Google Play or App Store to identify some of the some of the apps they would need. They will have been scored well, and then the kid or the mom won't be able to install those apps and use them. On the health side, or entertainment, well, most probably it will be about the synergies with those services already available in the market. That's what we're going to pursue. I think that's all I can comment on so far. Thank you. Our next question. How are those other targets being integrated into LTI KPIs? Let me handle that question. As you know, our new LTI program has two triggers for payments, a dividend and a higher market cap. Since both are exposed to the overall financial performance of the company, which includes those other, that's exactly how. That's how they're integrated, with no additional LTI KPIs for those other. On the short term, though, short term, like annual targets, well, obviously the management team has KPIs for those hours for each year, as is the case for any other segment. Okay, thank you. Next question. You have identified, you're guiding the mid-term target those hour margin of 13 to 15%. What's the actual EBITDA margin for the five stores you have piloted? Well, that's a very simple and a very difficult question at the same time. Maria has mentioned it, that the key driver here is obviously the share of private labels. So the launch of private label products, because that's the main margin, and we're going to launch those in 2021, at which point we'll be able to suggest the actual target EBITDA, the target margins that will take us to EBITDA margin of 13 to 15%. The pilot stores we have tested in the recent year were supposed to yield, to provide us with confidence that our revenue targets could be met. And our costs could be met, like rental fees and payroll. We have achieved these targets. On the EBITDA side, it's too early to discuss. We'll launch the private labels in 2021, and we'll be happy to announce the numbers. Thank you. Next question in writing. Farid has explained that the EBITDA margin in your PUPs is currently in high single digit, 8 to 9%. What's the target EBITDA margin for the PUP format in the midterm? And the answer is rather straightforward here. We target 8 or 9%. Next question. Do you see significant competition from the marketplaces on the pet supplies market? Well, I think the competition here is less than in the children's goods, because the pet supplies have about 70 to 75% of the whole market dedicated to food for pets. So you have Mars and Nestle, the large players consolidating the market, and then private labels contributing up to 30% of the revenue. If we consider Zoizaver, well, we are much more affordable to the customers. We are happy to deliver the goods faster. Our prices are better. And we have the exclusive product proposition in the form of our private labels. Considering the product proposition of the marketplace, we have the marketplace as well, and we are moving ahead with Dietzky already. We are adding pet supplies in our marketplace, and we'll carry on. Thank you. Our next question is, what do you think about the market share growth of Wildberries and Ozon, who are outperforming the market. And that was the case for Dietzky as well in 2017 to 2019. What do you think about your performance in 2020 and the midterm? Let me handle that for the past, at least, in retrospect, in 2017 through 2019. Please be reminded that we'll have rating agencies like showcasing top 100 e-commerce stores or online stores in the market, and one award goes to the fastest growing store for the year and for the past 3 years. So in the past 3 years, it's Dietzky who has been winning this award. They're officially the fastest growing online store in Russia in the course of the past 3 years, and that has that award has been given to us for 3 years running. So that's it in retrospect. Now in looking into the future, our omni-channel strategy represents the best demand and the most efficiency. The COVID-19 crisis has demonstrated the fact that in-store pickup is still the most popular approach for our customers. We have seen that in the share of growth and the pace of growth and the share of the market. Now, we believe our online development target three avenues: fastest and cheap delivery, broadest assortment with the help of our marketplace, and lowest pricing, thanks to our scale of business, would enable us to compete successfully against all of the pure players such as Wildberries and Ozon. I would like to have I would like to provide some further guidance on CAPEX. I think we still can provide further comment. Colleagues, indeed, I think there is a misunderstanding here. We're not talking about 9 billion rubles of CAPEX in our view. It's going to be 5 to 6 billion per year at the highest point. And then we have not made the decision as yet on the federal DCs whether we have will do construction or whether we do rental. In the past, the two DCs in Bekasovo had the initial CAPEX, it was less than 2 billion for the second warehouse. And then we got tax benefits and returned like 25% of that. So we're not talking about 8 or 9 billion per year, not at all. Colleagues, we have a couple of further questions online. First question is coming from Elena Zhironova. Yeah, thank you. It's not a question, Anna. I just want to calm you down. I have got it right. I've got to the same number of 5 billion per year. So I looked at the wrong number in my Excel spreadsheet. So 9 billion is a totally different number. So, frankly, I was very much concerned about something being wrong in my model, but in fact, it's fine. Thank you for confirming the number. Thank you, Lena. One further question from Alexei Krivoshapka. Colleagues, thank you again for giving me some time here. I would like to clarify one point. You're saying that the share of online revenue is like 30-40%, right? And do you intend to ramp that up looking forward? How would that spread across the... What's the breakdown in terms of the means of delivery? What's the share of courier delivery? What's the share of self-pickup? And how do you compensate for this logistics from warehouse to your customers, and also what's your average ticket? So these are my questions. Thank you. Pavel Pishchikov handling this question. As mentioned previously, pickup is the most popular means of delivery. Like more than 80% of all orders are picked up in Detsky stores. Some of our activities target courier delivery, but we believe it's going to be at about 80% looking forward for self-pickup. Let me add here as well, we see that major online players have about, a lion's share for the pure play online retailers at about 90% for the leading pure play online retailers, which serves to prove that the omnichannel strategy is extremely in demand in Russia and extremely efficient. Okay, and can you comment on the second part of my question as well? Could you please repeat? Sure. Well, if I want to have the goods delivered to my address, what's the cost of the last mile? Who's paying for that? So that's my first question. And another thing, what's your average ticket in rubles for online? Kyle Pishikov taking that again. Please be reminded, we currently have three different means of courier delivery. If you shop on the website or in the app, like if the product is available in a nearby store, you'll get that in 2 hours. Another option would be next day from the regional DC, and yet another option, which is if it's not available in a store or at a DC, you'll get that from the federal DC. All of the three means are visibly a single means. It's the same tariff, like we deliver free for tickets larger than 1,900 rubles. If it's less than 1,900, it's 199 rubles per delivery. Average ticket for the fast means of delivery, about 2,500 rubles, and from the federal DC, it's 3,100 rubles. That's it. Okay. Thank you. That's clear. Thank you. Colleagues, we have enough time for one question asked in the Q&A in writing. So, Detmir PUP metric include marketplace or first party sales only? 1P, it's 50-50 offline, online, as you hear from Farid, and the marketplace is coming on top. Or the pet products is going to be on top as well, because those other orders could be picked up in DM, PUP, or those other which would add to it. Thanks, Ed. Thank you, colleagues. Quite unfortunately, we're out of time. I would like to thank you for your questions. That is so interesting. And I would ask you to to take part in that survey, to get your feedback. It's available on the last slide of the presentation. Have a nice evening and stay safe.